Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. This is our fourth and last installment of June is Whale Month at Real Science Radio. And again, to help us, we have Dr. Carl Werner. Thank you, Carl, for this whole series. It's been so interesting.
Oh, it's great to be with you and sharing this with you.
So we're going to talk about the features, the characteristics that were used to determine that Ambulocetus was a whale. But first, you list the museums that have now omitted Rhodocetus. And I think that's really significant. That's part of the Werner effect.
When your lead scientist admits on camera that he had made up the whale tail, the fluke, and the flippers of Rhodocetus, it tends to put a wash rag on the whole thing, and you have to start removing that fossil from your displays.
Yeah, and so Dr. Gingrich, Philip Gingrich, there must be a lot of unhappiness with him, but he was not only the discoverer of Rhodocetus, but Pachycetus and others like the Himalayacetus. On his own personal webpage at the University of Michigan, he sort of gives a chronology, and he says that they were actually looking for whales in 1975. They went year after year back to Pakistan, and he said, we joked that there might be walking whales, and after a few years of looking for these, lo and behold, he starts to find them.
Yep. That, if you're looking for something, you'll eventually find it if you're looking hard enough, because your eyes start to play tricks on you. Your mind starts to play tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And, the paleontologists are notorious for this. If they're looking for an ape man, if they keep looking, they'll eventually find one, even if it turns out to be a pig's tooth or whatever, you know?
Yes, right, exactly. So it brings us then to Dr. Gingrich's student, Dr. Hans Thuesen. And again, from University of Michigan, but then he's moved on. When he found the fragments of a skull that he said was another walking whale, Ambulocetus, he said it had seven features that clearly indicated that this was a whale. Seven features. And maybe we could just give a summary of them, because there were other whale fossil experts who doubted that these were actually indicators and said that instead they're just purported to be evidence of whale characteristics.
One of the features he said was the whale ear wasn't attached. You know, whales are strange. Their ear bones are like almost like a softball. And when the whale head disintegrates, this softball just falls off the skull. The whale ear bone is not attached. And he reported in his original article that the ear bones were not attached to the skull. That was one of these seven characters that suggested that it would be a whale, but that was not true, because when we interviewed him, he said, no, it was attached to the skull. I could detach it pretty easily because the skull was breaking up, but it was attached. But in his original article, he said it was not attached.
Did he say it was not attached or poorly attached?
Poorly attached,
yeah.
Which is science speak for a whale ear being just attached with the soft tissues, but then when the soft tissues disintegrate, it falls off.
It falls off. And in fact, the Ambulocetus skull fragments were all broken in pieces. And so the fact that the ear bone was attached,
still attached,
is pretty significant, because if it was like a whale ear bone, then it wouldn't have been attached ever.
It would have just fallen off and been maybe nearby, but not next to the bone, the skull, but he removed it from the skull,
right,
which suggests that it was attached.
That's one of his seven. Another one is that a whale, the auditory bulla, it's called, that ear bone, is hollowed out, but the Ambulocetus ear bone doesn't have this hollowed out portion, as best as could be discerned.
Yeah, if you looked at the bowhead whale ear, this softball, it'd almost be like if you removed a third of the tennis ball, and you remove a third of the tennis ball, you have a hollowed out structure. That's a normal whale ear, and it's not attached to the skull. But his ear bone did not have that hollowed out feature. It looks solid, And another feature it didn't have is it didn't have the whale sigmoid process.
Right, that little bent S finger.
Yes.
Which he claimed it had. And then in your interview, you asked, does it really have that sigmoid process, that bent finger? Because with the previous skull, it was claimed that there was one, and we find out there wasn't. And what was his answer to your question?
You know, I forgot the exact words, but basically he recanted it. He said, really, it's as questionable as the other animal.
Yeah, as Pachycetus. Exactly.
Pachycetus.
He said it's as questionable whether or not it even had this finger-shaped process, it's called, this bump on the bone. And so his seven examples of why this is a whale, they're really falling apart. He talks about the cheekbone, and that's a startling one for him to list as among the seven pieces of evidence that this was a whale. How does he get that this is a whale's cheekbone?
And you have the luxury of having the book in front of you, because in my third edition of The Grand Experiment on page 267, it shows a cheekbone of a whale. A cheekbone of a whale is a very thin, it's almost string-like.
Yeah.
It's almost non-existent. Hmm. But like land animals, it's really thick. If you look at Ambulocetus's original fossils,
it's got a thick cheekbone.
It's thicker than a horse's.
Right. If you go from a string of like a dolphin to, let's say, a horse would be like a cord, a little bit thicker. In Ambulocetus, it's real thick.
It's really thick.
Right.
And yet he said it was thin like a whale. But, I mean, obviously, you look at the fossil and put them side by side, it is not.
It's 10 times thicker than a horse's cheekbone.
And yet this was one of the main seven features that says this animal with four legs is a whale. And yet all seven of these characters are, how to say, problematic.
Well, and he talks about another one is that it had a long muzzle. And he says that they found the complete lower jaw, so they know how long it was. And in reality, you look at the fossils, they didn't find the complete lower jaw. They reconstructed it significantly longer than the bones that they had.
Right. You could have made that skull one-third less long if you wanted to.
If you wanted to. But then there are whale evolution experts who say, but there are land creatures that have long muzzles anyway.
Yeah, that's
they acknowledge
right.
that. What kind of evidence is this? And it just goes on. I think we're making the point. And then he talks about the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all so superficial, so immature. And there's so much evidence that even the interpretation they want to give it is not a reasonable interpretation.
When his original article came out saying that Ambulocetus was a new walking whale, his counterpart at the University of California, that's Annalisa Berta, who's also an expert, not on his team, she said that these seven characters that he reports is the definition of a whale had never been used to define a whale before. So he's making a new definition of whale so that his new animal is a whale. In other words, that's circular reasoning. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come up with a new definition that my animal is a whale. Oh, look, it has all seven features of my new definition, so it is a whale.
Well, yeah, you even quote an expert who says, well, the reason it's a transition is because it's in the lineage to whales.
Which is against circular reasoning.
Right. They define it that way. And so that's what it is.
That's right. You say it's a walking whale, then it is a whale because it's in the lineage.
Then in your chronology, you go to 1988. These headings are fun. 1988, odd-toed ungulates are in. And then we're going to get to 1999, cows are out, hippos are in. But with the odd-toed creatures, odd-toed are like horses and rhinos, for example. And they might have hooves, but it's what's under the hooves, like with a car, you know, what's under the hood. So under the hooves, there's one toe like horses or three toes like a rhino.
That's right.
And so you have evolution scientists that are guessing which order of hoofed mammals may have evolved into a whale, and they're saying it's the odd-toed ones.
And this is not their first choice. You know, the previous decades, they said it was the
Mesonychids.
Now we're on to the odd-toed ungulate is the mammal order that evolved into whales.
Yeah, and the Mesonychids, they sort of fell in both camps because the early ones had five toes, But then later they had four toes. That would make them even-toed. And even-toed creatures are like gazelles or giraffes or goats. I had to look this up. Camels, bison, pigs, cows. So that would be the even-toed. But the odd-toed hoof animals were really in the late 80s.
And it just goes to show you that each scientist can come up with an opinion and say that this opinion is, you know, science, that the whales evolved from this group, and yet the next decade it changes. How is that science?
And you give the footnote showing a good sample of the scientists who claim, oh, it has to be odd-toed, these creatures. In 1999, when the cows were out, of course, they were even-toed, two-toed. 1999, the cows were out and the hippos were in.
Yep. So now the other scientists are saying it's the even-toed ungulates. And initially, they were initially saying, oh, maybe it's the cows evolved into whales. And then someone says, nope, we're going to look at the DNA. And the DNA says the hippos were the even-toed hoofed animals that became whales. You see, it's just continuous change, what's supposed to be the best proof, you know?
Yeah, and this is the Tokyo Institute of Technology, Dr. Okada, who's a biologist and a professor there. And he said, after looking at the sequencing of the genetics, he says, I am 100% confident that whales are most closely related to the hippopotamus. That's 100% confident. And so then you quote Dr. Daryl Domning. He specializes, again, in aquatic mammal evolution. He's a paleontologist, professor of anatomy. And he says, to a paleontologist, this is nonsense. Whales have been around in the fossil record five times as long as hippos. He says, you got whales for tens of millions of years before hippos come on the scene. So that's the dilemma that they're in. But you get to 2007, and then hippos are out, and the deer is in.
You know, I could just imagine the audience. Did he say deer?
Right.
Are you saying, Dr. Warner, that scientists now believe deer became whales?
And this is one of the leading, this is one of the top two. I mean, the two guys.
Yep. Hans Dewissen is now saying that a deer-like animal evolved into a whale. A deer. After the cow, after the black bear, after the hippo.
Yeah, and we'll have to give his reason for why it must be the deer now. But you have, from an exhibit in the Melbourne Museum in 2013, the walking whales, and whales descended from hoofed, deer-like land animals. The earliest walking whales caught their prey by ambushing them in shallow water. So, so you got a little deer. And that's what whales evolved from. And this is from, again, the discoverer of Ambulocetus. It's almost as though they get a lot of fame and money and publications from discovering a whale ancestor. And then nothing happens for some years. So they got to discover something else.
I don't know what the motivation
is. To stay relevant. That's what
it's irrelevant. If you see the deer that he believes evolved into a whale, I mean, it's this living small deer right now that lives in the world today. And
it's called a mouse deer.
A mouse deer, you know, and it looks like a little beagle or something about that size. He's saying that evolved into a whale. It reminds me, when we were in South Africa, I was explaining to one of the local guides at the Kruger National Park. I said, do you know that the scientists believe that hyenas evolved into whales? He knew what a hyena was. He knew what a whale was. And his eyes got so big, like, are you crazy?
Right.
You know, he looked at me like I was insane. I said, no, really, the scientists believe that hyenas evolved into whales, a hyena-like animal. And his eyes got bigger. And I could just imagine if I went back to him and said, they changed their mind. Now it's a deer evolved into a whale.
And if this is the best they have, which is what they say over and over, then the audience should get the idea that they do not have fossil evidence for the theory of evolution. But the fact that our friend Hans here has discovered this latest fossil evidence of whale evolution, I went back to try to figure out who discovered what. You got these two guys, like Gingrich is Rhodocetus, Pachycetus, Himalayacetus, and then there's some of these transitions that it's very unclear who actually did the discovery. But Gingrich's name is part of the paper that reports the discovery.
That's right, like Cynonics and the like. In other words, two guys from the same institution are responsible for most of all of this, which is odd.
Out of tens of thousands of paleontologists, each of whom would become world famous if they found a transition to the whale.
That's right. And they would just report it. They don't need them to dig up a fossil and say, oh, wow, this is a walking whale. They wouldn't need these guys. But only these two are finding Pachycetus, Rhodocetus, Ambulocetus, and Cynonyx. Only these two guys can see whale characters in these land animals that where no one else could see whale characters.
So Thuesen here, the discoverer of Ambulocetus, when he finds Indohyus, it just looks like a simple little it looks like a mouse deer. But he figures out that it's really a whale or a transition to a whale because of part of its ear bone. So we're back to the ears again. Forget the teeth, forget the DNA, forget the mouth. It's part of the ear. And he says that this inner wall of the ear is 10 times thicker than the outer wall, or at least that's what shows a whale's ear, is that the inner wall is 10 times thicker than the outer. So he says this little deer fossil, it must be a whale or headed to a whale because part of its ear is thicker than the other part. And you show a photograph of the ear bone.
Yeah, now he's right when he says a whale ear is thicker on the inside.
Yes.
That's true.
Right.
But when you look at Indohyus's ear bone and you look at a close-up photograph of what he's calling the thickness, I can't see what he's seeing. I would say that it's not thicker.
You suggest showing this to 10 people and asking them to measure. Because here's the photo that, by the way, doesn't appear in the typical evolutionary article in National Geographic, or if you want to go to a Science News Daily or whatever, Scientific American, they're not going to show you the actual bone that proves that this was an ancestor to a whale. And here it is, and his argument is completely indefensible that the inner wall is 10 times thicker than the outer wall. So it must be.
To me, they look like the outer wall is thicker than the inner wall. The opposite of what he concluded, but he would say, no, this is only the outer wall. The rest of it is not the outer wall, even though it all looks the same.
Right, right. The argument for this little deer-like creature, so it turns out that whales evolved from deer, not from a cat, not from a bear, not from a wolf, not from a hyena, not from a hippo, but from a deer. It continues to be as superficial as it could possibly be.
And yet, even though each evidence is overturned as each decade flips by, it's still the best proof. Even though all the original evidences that were used to come up with that statement that whale evolution is the best proof, all the evidences are disappeared, but it's still the best proof.
Mm-hmm.
That is very suspect.
So, Carl, to conclude our whale month at Real Science Radio, could we look at your chart that lays it all out on one page, on page 275, which land animal did whales evolve from? We'll just go right down the list.
Okay, so 1859, Charles Darwin said it was the black bear that evolved into a whale.
All right.
Then in 1883, this William Flowers said it was an ungulate, a hoofed animal.
Where bears have claws. Then we get into the argument of whether it's an even-toed or an odd-toed, which are very different creatures.
Or even-toed is one mammal order, or is an odd-toed is another mammal order, or whether it was a mesonychid, which is another order.
So that brought us from 1950 to 1966 to 1988, and you point out in the text that these are four different mammal orders that are being proposed as the ancestor. So not just different families or different genus or
That's
different
right.
species. We're talking about four different orders of mammals.
I mean, if you say this is the best proof, but you can't even pin down for us and have this evidence stick for a while, which order of mammals the whales evolved from, are you kidding? That is terrible.
Yeah.
You should be able to tell us exactly what order
right.
mammal they evolved from. And also you should be able to tell us which family and which genus. But you can't even sort out which order of mammals the whales evolved from.
Right. And evolution, again, claims to answer the question of how. So how did land animals evolve into marine creature organisms? And if there's fossil evidence to show it, then it needs to show it. But there is none. And if evolutionists were honest, They would say the entire evolutionary fossil record to whales is in tatters. We have no idea. That's what they should say.
It is in tatters.
Yes.
This chart we're talking about is just the one question, what land animal? And then the other discussion we're having beside this is, what are the in-between animals between the land animal and the whale? And that's in tatters, too.
That's in tatters. And then the anatomy changing a land creature to a marine organism, the discrete changes that have to occur are in the many thousands of changes.
Oh, boy.
And to get a mutation, to randomly introduce something novel that would be helpful, and then natural selection to select it, and then that has to go through the population sufficient size to retain that for millions of years, and then add on thousands more, the whole story is unworkable and absurd. But it's considered to be unquestionable today, but the weight of it, it's going to self-destruct with a little help from our friends. But it is self-destructing.
And if you go to the natural history museums today, and I'm saying the American Museum of Natural History, Tokyo Museum or whatever, and just go through and look at their fossils, you realize that, oh, that fossil's a fake. Oh, that fossil's altered. They made up the nose on this one. And these are ones that are still hanging. In other words, this information's out. I mean, I just uncovered it. The scientists admit it. And yet, why is Ambulocetus, this walking whale, still on display at, you know, 5 or 6 museums that I'm aware of?
Then through your chart, that was up to 1988. Then 1998, you've got the hyena-like creature.
Yep.
California Academy of Sciences. 1999, that's when the war really started between the geneticist and the paleontologist regarding whales. I mean, that war is being waged in every different aspect of evolution today.
Yes. But
regarding whales, 1999 in Tokyo, they said it's got to be the hippopotamus. 2001, it's now a wolf-like or a cat-like creature.
And Gingrich discovered that one.
Yep. And 2011, we're at a wolf-like creature.
And now this wolf-like creature, Pachycetus, was the one that started out in the water on the magazine covers. And when they realized it was a land animal, they said, oh, it's still an ancestor.
Right.
We'll just move it now to the land animal that became the whale.
So
instead of being a walking whale, it now became the land animal that became a whale.
Right. So Pachycetus became a land animal. And 2013, you've got a different wolf-like creature, Mesonychid.
Yeah. Now, so here's the Natural History Museum in London in 2013 saying a Mesonychid evolved into a whale, even though 12 years earlier, Gingrich says Mesonychids have nothing to do with whales.
Right. So, and this was a particular kind of Mesonychid.
Yep, the wolf-like Mesonychs.
And then in 2013, the Melbourne Museum adopts the deer story.
And so you're going through the order Carnivora, you know, the carnivore order, which is Charles Darwin said the black bear became the whale. Then you go through the Mesonychid order, or some people call them Condylarths. And then you have another scientist saying it's the order called the even-toed ungulates, the artiodactyls, and another scientist group saying it's the odd-toed ungulates, the perissodactyls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dr. Carl Werner, thank you for presenting to us the best fossil evidence for evolution. It's really been enlightening. Actually, it's very powerful evidence for the low standard of proof that is required by the worldwide evolutionary community. Very low standard of proof.
You know, when I started these interviews, I had no idea that any of this would turn out to be wrong. I just went to these museums thinking they had all this evidence. I just started asking the most basic, simple questions. This information is available to anybody who would just start asking questions. Could evolution be wrong? And once you start asking that question, boy, there's a lot of this evidence that just doesn't seem to carry water, you know?
Wow. So, Carl Werner, we only have a few minutes left. Could you talk to us about your current work? What have you been up to now?
We're working and finishing up the third book in our series, and this book is called Human Evolution. And the first book in the Human Evolution series is Ape Men Created from Non-Primate Mammals. You know, the ape men made from a horse head, the ape men made from a dolphin rib, the ape men made from a pig, the ape men made from a horse toe. So So we have a whole book of those to start out the Human Evolution series. It's really quite fascinating to see the scientists making their case about a dolphin rib and making an entire drawing of an ape man based on a dolphin rib. Amazing.
So when you do your work, you've created the book first and then the video, or do you work on them simultaneously?
The book is so much work because it's all the documentation. You have to document every sentence, more or less, you know, every fact. That takes 5 to 10 years to go out and get that and write it up. And once the book is done, creating the video is actually pretty easy. It's only about a year-long process because you're just taking your best photographs, your best interviews, and crunching it down to a very small 50-minute product. Compared to a 350-page book, it's very easy to do, you know?
Wow. And we have showed your videos at Denver Bible Church for one of our Sunday school classes.
Oh.
And what we'd like to do, and we always need to get permission, but we'd like to show both Living Fossils and Evolution the Grand Experiment for a family night. We've got a brand new widescreen up in front of the church. We just purchased the church just a few months ago. And so with your permission, we'll schedule and host a family science video night.
They're going to have fun because that second video in the series called Living Fossils has this spectacular footage of diving on the Great Barrier Reef. I got footage of me swimming with this 4-foot-long Maury Ross fish on the Barrier Reef. It's quite a treat for your eyes, just the eye candy of the video footage that we shot.
Well, and like the books, both videos are just beautiful. Tremendous production quality.
Thank you.
I'm just amazed, Dr. Werner, because for you and your wife to do this, I assume that you hired a production company to make the videos, but you guys have produced these.
Debbie does most of the videography, and we hire in people to advise us, to edit it, to do this or that. But then we end up doing most of the work, you know. But you have to get pros to come in to beef it up. It's impossible to have anybody to have all that skill set.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And thank you for all your time. You've been so generous, and we're just thrilled. It's an honor to talk with you, Carl Werner.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on your show and talking with your audience.
You're very welcome. So that is Dr. Carl Werner and Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Volume 1, and then Volume 2, Living Fossils. We have both of those DVDs available for you to purchase. And when you do, of course, it should be obvious, but you help Real Science Radio continue to produce some of what is the most informative broadcast information available on the creation-evolution debate. And so we do this here. It's a labor of love, but we don't have a large foundation. We don't have any foundation behind us. We don't get large grants. It's me, Fred, you, and the Lord. And that's it. And we need your help. So if you could make a donation at our store, you could donate once or automatic monthly, which helps us tremendously, of course. Or you could purchase Dr. Werner's videos. And that, of course, as with everything we sell, will help support the continuation of Real Science Radio. So thank you for your time. Please share this with others. Our website, realscienceradio.com. May God bless you.
By the handiwork of God, tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.